This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is the bite-sized business breakfast best bits from Friday, June the 10th. Coming up, we speak to Hashem Montasar. He is the chef, owner, brains behind The Lighthouse. Five locations around town now. Wanted to know from him about the rise in price of ingredients. Is that being impacted on prices for restaurants and restaurateurs around the industry? Plus, of course, the pressures being imparted by cost of living. How are restaurants dealing with those price restrictions? Khadija was live in studio. Khadija from Emirates MBD was into Crunch the Numbers, PMI data, Dubai tourism data, and much, much more. All looking pretty good at the moment in light of some of the issues worldwide at present. Luke Tapp was also joining us this morning. Luke's from Pinsent Masons. We wanted a bit more details on how does one go about an IPO, not basically from a company's point of view, but from an employee's point of view, and those close to an IPO. How does one where do you draw that line between the information that you discuss and the information that you don't, so that the IPO that's been announced but hasn't been launched hasn't been compromised? Plus, big old focus on all things food. Must have been a Friday, surely, as we were looking at the price of food, the price of ingredients, but also the development of the industry at present as well. That's all right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Let's do it, shall we? Because I have pitched a new feature to producer Mo yesterday. I think we need a weekly. A weekly would probably do it, because otherwise we'll get too depressed. But we could probably push it to daily. A daily update, not just so much on the markets, the commodities, the currencies and otherwise. A daily update on what's in short supply. Because every single day, thee and me, come into these studios, open up our various sources of information and find out that there's yet another shortage that basically makes worth not living, life not worth living, that's for sure, because especially at the weekend when you want to indulge yourself, the latest shortage, and we've seen all sorts of shortage, haven't we? Potatoes over in the United States, hence very few fries available these days.
Lettuce. In lettuce. Australia.
Lettuce.
Meaning cabbage in your KFC burger.
That begorra, begorra, horror, horror, Aussies have to eat cabbage. What else do we see? And then more, you know, we jest. There are more serious concerns as well. The import of live chickens into Singapore from Malaysia. Malaysia closing their borders to live exports, having a massive impact on the food and beverage industry over in Singapore and elsewhere. Well, the latest one to add to this list, and I'm going to need your help here because it's one of those words that I always get wrong.
Do you know? I know. And I'm sitting there this morning and I'm brushing my teeth and I'm thinking, sriracha? Do you know who we need to ask? The person who will know will be Shruti Rajendran, a woman who will be familiar because of her wide-ranging international cultural interests of what this hot sauce, adopted by the West but made by Hoi Fong, huge sriracha. It's a hipster thing now. She's younger than we are. Sriracha, should we go with sriracha?
Sriracha, is that? I mean, that's how it's sort of spelt. Sriracha is the sauce in question. Shruti, our producer, who listeners and viewers can't hear or see, but we can because we've got it in our ears and every single morning, has just applied the perfect rule of thumb to unsure pronunciations. Just say it really quickly, and no one really noticed. And that might be the way forward here. Just sriracha. That's fine. You know the ones we mean. It's the squeezy bottle, red squeezy bottle with the chili seeds in it. And as Brandy rightfully says, yeah, any restaurant worth its weight in gold you go to these days, you will find a bottle of sriracha there on the table. Hoi Fong Inc., one of the world's largest producers in the Asian hot sauce market, says it anticipates a major shortage of the world's beloved sriracha. And I like the way that they went about it. they ain't pulling any punches. Released a statement yesterday saying, unfortunately, we can confirm that there is an unprecedented shortage of our products. We are still endeavouring to resolve this issue that has been caused by several spiralling events, including unexpected crop failure from the spring chili harvest. As if we needed another problem to contend with here, Brandy Scott. Who saw COVID-19 restrictions therein? Cost of inflation, lack of travel, climate change, bits and pieces, and now the chili harvest is gone.
You could argue that some of that climate change stuff has weighed in on the chili harvest. Shruti Rajendran has thoughtfully put a pronunciation guide in the system for us. Here we go.
You omit the R. You just say Sriracha.
Sriracha. I am on InstaShop. Other delivery apps are available. Sriracha is available in 5 shops near me, 26 and a half dirhams. So forget the stock market, which is down 2% this morning in the from the US. Load up on Sriracha, arbitrage. Start selling it to people who can't get their hands on it in the States.
Yeah, it's a problem. They're concerned. The producers of Sriracha, as we mentioned, Hui Fong, said there is a big problem at the moment. In fact, saying the situation is out of our control and would detrimentally affect the making and the selling of Sriracha, the company said in its letter to investors. So that is your product of the day, which is in much demand but short supply.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been talking about whether or not you can get your hands on products here. We've been talking about supply chain issues over the last couple of months, longer actually, for quite a bit of the pandemic. But we had people saying to us, oh, it's all starting to ease out now. It probably isn't.
What's the other word that I can't pronounce or I always get a little bit confused about? Those trendy things that my daughter eat every morning for breakfast. It's a bowl of sort of yogurt and berries and bits and pieces.
Bircher muesli?
No. What's it called? It'll come to me in a minute. You know the one that you go into any posh cafe these days?
Granola?
And they're doing achai. Akai?
Acai? Yeah.
Acai or achai?
I think it's acai.
Or acai. Shoot! Acai. Okay, we're going to go with an acai bowl. Yeah, that's the other one. I always feel a bit nervous going into restaurants. Again, it's one I point rather than say.
We've all got those on a menu. Let us know, by the way. There you go, bit of fun on a Friday. What is it on a menu that you just motion at rather than try and say out loud and show your lack of culture?
The other one I get as well, and I should know better because being a sort of, you know, stuck up foodie that I am. But is it minute steak or minute steak? I can never work it out. I'm so embarrassed in steak restaurants because you go in there, don't go, oh yeah, I love my wagyu and I love my wala. Oh, I don't know if it's a minute steak or a minute steak.
I thought it was a minute steak because it's just literally like
makes sense, doesn't
done.
It?
Done.
But then it's always quite small as well, which would make it a minute steak.
It would indeed. Let us know your can't say it on the menu, going to pretend that I know what it is item. Speaking of restaurants, by the way, quite seriously, we are going to have a chat to the guys from the Lighthouse at 7:30 because restaurateurs have been saying to us that growing food costs, I mean, we obviously worry about the grocery bill, but a big part of being a chef isn't just being able to a minute-y steak. Chefs are also judged on how well they keep to costs, particularly in hotels. It's a huge part of being a chef, rather than just being able to do clever choppy things without taking your fingers off with an onion. And I've had people in the industry say to me, we're sort of, you know, facing the question at the moment, do we change suppliers and buy stuff that's a bit cheaper if we have a, you know, shortage or whatever, but if the costs are going up, do we do something that's a bit cheaper on the menu, or do we put prices up and risk putting our customers off? And that's the question they face at the moment.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
All right, with more and more IPOs being launched in the UAE, more companies and employees not a million miles from the studio are having to deal with compliance issues for the first time, particularly around what you are and aren't allowed to say. And what should they be keeping in mind? We're getting a bit of legal advice this morning from Luke Tapp, partner at the law firm Pinsent Masons. Luke leads the firm's Middle East employment practice. Luke, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brandy. Good morning.
What generally do companies need to start putting in place when they know an IPO is coming when it comes to explaining the legal bits and pieces to staff?
Yeah, thanks, Brandy. You're right. It's a really interesting topic at the moment. It's obviously happening more and more within this region. In terms of the way in which organisations manage staff during the process of an IPO, there's really two elements to the workforce. There's the deal team that will be brought into the discussions in relation to the IPO right from the beginning. And during that process, during those early discussions, it's incredibly important that all of those discussions are kept confidential. So there'll be items like non-disclosure agreements, lock-in agreements that those senior individuals that are part of the deal team will sign up to. And then at the point where everything is in place and the IPO is being announced to the public, that's when the wider workforce will be brought into the picture. And there'll be separate sort of discussions, announcements and guidelines in relation to the way in which those employees will be managed during that part of the IPO process.
At what point in all of this do companies need to start worrying about comms? What employees say about the firm itself and its plans and its performance?
Yeah, really interesting question. I mean, in terms of worrying about communications, at the beginning, you know, during that very confidential, sensitive stage, it should be a media sort of blackout. So there should be very clear guidelines that no comms can take place whatsoever in relation to the IPO. At the point at which it becomes public knowledge and the wider workforce is aware, there should be guidelines in place. And it will depend, it will vary depending on business sensitivities as to what those guidelines set out. But generally, the areas of the business that the company will be most concerned about will obviously be reputational risk, it will be regulatory risk, and it will be financial risk. Because when you're about to IPO, you don't want any of those items becoming an issue within the public domain. So there'll be really strict guidelines around things that people can and cannot say that could have an impact on any of those aspects of the business.
Well, what do we mean by talking in general? I mean, a lot of the companies that are going to IPO bits of themselves are mammoth employers. I mean, we're part of Dubai Holding. Yesterday it announced the TECOM IPO. Media blackout is one thing, but what about talking to friends, to family, to colleagues you work with in a coffee shop?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of those discussions, obviously, just from a practical perspective, it's difficult to regulate. But there are two elements to the way in which those types of conversations should be managed. There's, well, what does the law say? And then what does the organisational policy say? What does the law say about those types of conversations? Well, in any event, it's a gross misconduct offence to disclose confidential information of your company to a third party. That's whether there's an IPO or not. So if an employee describes in detail information that's outside of the public domain to a friend, to a third party, to the press, that could be gross misconduct under Article 44 of the new labour law. So that could be unlawful generally. If it's information that's already within the public domain, so you gave a good example there in relation to the TECOM IPO, and if it's information that was announced yesterday that they're just discussing generally, that wouldn't be a breach of the labour law, but there may still be company policy or organisational policy that restricts what can and cannot be discussed. But that's more at the discretion of the organisation and will depend on the business sensitivities.
Where's the line, though, between saying to your sister, you should buy into this, I reckon we're doing all right, we've got a flash new coffee machine, and breaking the rules around promoting an IPO?
Something that's interesting, actually, that sort of touches on that question is insider trading. And so at the point in which any organisation becomes listed, there's very strict regulations around insider trading, around tipping off people with information that you know because you're an employee that is not in the public domain that can have an impact on the way in which they trade. So there's very strict regulations in relation to that, which employees absolutely need to be mindful of, and organizations need to have policies in relation to. But as you say, Brandy, sometimes it's not that black and white, and it can just be, well, did you see that announcement yesterday? It's pretty exciting at the moment in the organization. And, you know, you're my sister. I think I'll be buying some of those shares. And that kind of conversation, pretty innocent, unlikely to have breached any of those rules or breached any of the provisions within the labor law or company policy.
1 minute left with you, Luke. What about social media? I mean, it's one thing to post yourself. What about liking, sharing, commenting on rumour?
Yeah, interesting. So I think if you're an organisation, if you're an employee of an organisation that's already announced the IPO, and there's an article on, you know, the Dubai Eye homepage or on a newspaper website, and you like that, that's already in the public domain, that's unlikely to be an issue, certainly not a breach of the labour law. But if you're part of that deal team and it's still quite sensitive, confidential information that you're sharing on Facebook, then yeah, that's likely to be a breach of Article 44, a breach of the non-disclosure agreement, and potentially something that the organisation can dismiss you for. I would say to employees, in any event, adopt a cautious approach to any social media activity whenever your organisation is going through an IPO, because as I said, reputation, regulatory, financial risk is incredibly high there, and you can be sure that the organisation and its consultants will be sort of monitoring online activity to make sure all of those things are being sort of correctly controlled to the extent possible.
Luke Tabb is a partner at Pinsent Masons, also leads the law firm's Middle East employment practice. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Well, we are digging into a couple of our headlines now. Lots of numbers on the Dubai economy and strong tourism performance in both visitor numbers and in that sector in the PMI data. But are other bits of the private sector keeping up? Very pleased to be joined now by Khatija Haque, Chief Economist and Head of Research at Emirates NBD. Khatija, good morning. Nice to have you back.
Good morning, Brandy.
Let's kick off looking at the S&P PMI numbers. 35-month high, 55.7, very respectable. Let's start with what's good and what's pushing it up there.
So the big drivers for the strong PMI reading, not just in May, but really over the last several months, has been a continued recovery or increase in business activity on a month-on-month basis, and also an increase in new work on a month-on-month basis. So businesses are reporting that they're obviously able to do more, produce more, they have more customers and activity, and also they're getting pipelines of orders coming through at a faster rate pretty much every month. So that's a very good indication of demand, particularly domestic demand, because the export side, certainly at the UAE level, is a little bit softer than the domestic side.
And tourism has been one of the stars of the PMI numbers, and we've got the Dubai tourism numbers as well. Are they good for the end of COVID, or are they good regardless?
It's good. It's both, really. I mean, when we compare it to where we were pre-COVID, in terms of the number of visitors that have come to Dubai in the first 4 months of the year, we're around 80% of where we were over that period in 2019. So the recovery, obviously, over 2020 and 2021 has been exceptional. We're around 200% higher than we were last year, but we still haven't got quite back to where we were pre-pandemic. And I think, you know, this is going to be a slow process. I think we've heard from the CEO of Dubai Airports as well, saying he's only expecting traffic through the airports to get back to pre-COVID levels in 2024. And this is, of course, it's a global phenomenon. It's going to take a while. There are still areas where tourists are not, people are not allowed to move around. China, for example, is still closed. And of course, that has historically been quite an important market for us. So without those Chinese visitors, it's going to take a bit longer to get back to pre-COVID levels.
So the tourism growth is great. But if you read into the PMI report, there's a suggestion that it could be masking weaker performance in other sectors.
Well, we have seen a bit of softening in the new work in the wholesale and retail trade sector. And on the construction side as well, that's probably where we've seen the biggest signs of softness. So activity in construction is still high. So projects that have already been started are ongoing. But the real weakness has been the lack of new construction work coming through. So for the first time in many months, we saw new orders for construction actually decline relative to the previous month. So that does suggest that, you know, perhaps the momentum in that industry post-Expo is starting to slow. And I think the other issue is that in construction in particular, the cost pressures are now immense. So we've seen a very sharp rise in input costs for construction businesses, raw materials, freight, fuel, all of that stuff. And at the same time, because the demand is a little bit softer, they're not able to pass that on to their buyers or to their customers. And so, you know, they really are feeling the pinch in terms of their margins. But I think that cost story and margin pressure story is one which is evident in other sectors as well.
And it was in the Saudi PMI data as well that we looked at just a couple of days ago. What's the bigger inflation picture that you see in this report?
So broadly, we saw input costs for businesses rising at the fastest pace in 4 years in May. And this is businesses saying that relative to the previous month, their costs have gone up. And the rate at which they've gone up has become much faster in 2022 than it was in 2021. One of the big things which showed up in the comments in this report were fuel prices. So businesses are also feeling the impact of high fuel prices. A lot of stuff here gets moved around by truck. There's a lot of delivery services. So all of these things are now starting to cost more. And again, because they can't pass on those costs to their buyers, they're starting to become a little bit worried about their margins and about their cost pressures and a little bit less optimistic, I think, about the coming 12 months than they have been, let's say, during the Expo period.
Looking at the employment sector of the PMI report, what's your read on it? There is growth in employment, in fact, the fastest growth so far this year, but it's not fast growth.
It's not fast growth. And this is something which I've sort of struggled to understand really for the last 18 months, because when we had the peak shutdown in the second quarter of 2020, we saw a significant drop in the employment component of the PMI, which is exactly what we expected, right? Businesses were closing, staff that they could let go, they did let go. But then when the economy reopened, we didn't really see firms rehire at the same rate that they made people redundant. And over the last year and a half, we've only really seen very incremental growth in terms of the private sector jobs number based on the survey, not nearly as fast as, let's say, the increase in activity or the increase in new work. So a firm is reporting really strong growth in orders, but they're not going out and hiring aggressively to actually meet those orders. And so what we are seeing is the backlogs of work that firms are facing is rising. It's taking them longer to deliver on customer orders. And, you know, the question is, well, why aren't they going out and hiring? And I suspect, the issue is uncertainty about the future and what their costs are going to look like going forward, as well as whether the demand is going to be sustained. So if you're not sure that you're still going to be generating these new orders, you know, in 6 months' time, then you don't want to go out and invest in getting more staff on board.
Khadija Haque is the Chief Economist and Head of Research at Emirates NBD. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
Talking to us about the latest PMI numbers that have come out in the last 24 hours for Dubai, as well as the numbers that Dubai Tourism has released itself about visitors to the Emirate in the first 4 months of this year.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk all things restaurants. Let's talk all things food and beverage. Who do we turn to? One of the best restaurants in Dubai, award winner. It has been featured in a number of the best ofs list right here in Dubai. Now boasts five destinations around town. I'm referencing, of course, The Lighthouse. The founder and the owner-operator of The Lighthouse is Hashim Montasar, who joins us live here in studio. Hashim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Thanks so much indeed for joining us. And a good time to get you in, because we need an industry expert to give us the sort of feelings of what's happening on the ground. We understand that costs are going through the roof at the moment, pretty much across the board. Prices of ingredients, prices of foodstuffs are up globally due to inflation. We're hearing every day about the impending food crisis. What's that mean for us on the ground here? Are you seeing the cost of your ingredients going up?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. And Tom, just as a side thing, you invited me to come permanently on the show. I accept. So just thought to say that on air, because now you're stuck with me.
I just love the fact that you were here really early. You live around the corner. You bought pastries. You can come every day.
Exactly, exactly. So I'll be back. No, joking aside, yes, I think obviously inflation is a global problem that we're seeing today, certainly in food prices. Certainly we're seeing the restaurant business. I don't think there are easy answers. What we have done is we've looked at our supply chain very carefully, and I would encourage most restaurateurs to do that, and chefs, and try to swap as much as you can of any imported ingredients into local ingredients or regional ingredients. What that means is then you're probably getting a lower cost. Now, there's an issue of quality control, so you have to be careful. But when we've done this exercise, we found that you can actually... We were able to swap a substantial amount of our daily ingredients from imported ones to local ones, which reduces your food cost significantly, assuming you can keep the same quality, of course. And to me, that is really answer number one. So, I mean, you know, in a nutshell, I think restaurateurs and owner-operators and chefs have to own their supply chain. They just have to look very carefully, go line item by line item, and try to reduce their costs. Because the option of increasing prices is honestly, in my view, in Dubai at least, very, very difficult to execute.
There will be certain items that you won't be able to source on the supply chain locally. It's great news that we are able to turn to that supply chain now. And we've seen huge investment into that in recent years. And as you say, there are so many products now available. But for those that aren't, are they affecting the bottom line for you in terms of pricing?
100%. So I think if you're not able to do that, your other option is also, I mean, another thing we do is we've been in operation for over 5 years and we always pay on time. Mm-hmm. We've gone to every one of our suppliers and asked for better terms. So that helps your cash flow and gives you a little bit more room, especially during the summer when business is usually lower. Mm-hmm. Other than that, honestly, your other options are not great. One is to try to increase prices. In a very saturated, very competitive market, that's difficult to do. Another one is, which you alluded to earlier, is to, you know, make the portion smaller. Mm. I don't think that's fair for consumers. So yes, if not, it will affect your bottom line for sure.
Is that, again, how do you, if, and I'm not saying this is a policy at the Lighthouse, as you just said there, but industry-wide, we are getting a lot of text messages of people saying, look, I've gone back to a favourite restaurant, portion size is significantly smaller than it has been in the past. Is that something that you just make a choice of as a founder, as an owner, as a restaurateur? Or do you should you be advising, should you be letting the client know in advance?
I think you should let the client know. And frankly, I don't think you should do it. If you have a dish today, now what people sometimes do is they will package it in a, say, a business lunch or some kind of offer. So if you're coming up with something new, you could have, you know, a smaller fish, but it's seen as a business lunch. You're getting more value for money. Mm. That is acceptable. And most of your customers will accept it. But to have the dish that Tom has been having for the last 5 years, his favorite pasta, being all of a sudden reduced without notice, I don't think that really creates a good experience for the customer. I don't think it creates loyalty either.
Let's talk standards if we can. And a good time to be talking standards. We've got GoMU coming to town. We've got the Michelin Guide coming to town. A lot about that in the next couple of weeks. Look, that's an indication that some of the great food critics, the great food references are looking to Dubai, looking to the UAE as a genuine food producer at the moment. How do you keep standards high, though, given these pressures?
That's a very good question. Look, I think you just have to keep at it. And there's really no easy answer here. And I think people have to be very focused on the day-to-day. You're right. Michelin is coming. MENA 50 Best is already here. The one good thing we've seen, the trend we've seen over the last 5 years in Dubai, despite pandemic and post-pandemic, is you're seeing many more homegrown concepts thrive. Yeah. And you are very likely in Michelin see some, you know, let's call them imported or franchise brands, the Zumas of the world, LPMs, etc. I think you will be hopefully positively surprised, all of us, by seeing many more homegrown brands which are now standing shoulder to shoulder with these global brands, which is great.
And what's really interesting there, Hesham, is, you know, one of these guide sort of mantras is that you've got to have that supply chain in place. You've got to have quality ingredients as well. all too often, you know, I know that there have been certain businesses here that have relied on imports of certain products in order to keep their standards high as well. Is this going to be a little bit of a sort of sorting the men from the boys, sorting the industry out in terms of if you got a supply chain right, then you're going to survive this?
100%. I think a lot over the next year or two will be about supply chain and maintaining the quality of your supply chain. In Dubai, we're very, very lucky. A lot of people don't know that, but how easy it has been, even despite the disruptions, to import everything. So you become over-reliant. You become also a little bit complacent in terms of looking at the pricing of your supply chain, what you're getting from suppliers, the quality of the food you're getting. In other places, you don't have a choice. If you lived in other parts of the world, you cannot really import everything overnight the way we do here. So I think that has introduced a certain amount of complacency. And I think this is a very good time to look into that and really make sure you have an airtight supply chain.
Talking of supply, you need suppliers as well. Let's talk about that age-old relationship between restaurateurs, founder owners and suppliers as well. Do you have to be a bit more empathetic? Do you have to be a little bit more fluid these days?
Look, I mean, I feel for them, absolutely. I mean, it's a difficult time. I mean, you know, many of those suppliers already work on thin margins. Of course, right now you're seeing huge disruptions across the world. So what we've tried to do is not squeeze them as price, as I said earlier, during that particular time, because at the end of the day, we will work together. It's one ecosystem. But what we've tried to do is say, look, do something, for example, on the cash flow side. If my payment terms are 30 days, give me 45 days. And I think the key to make those kind of demands is you have to have a history of paying on time, honoring those. I think those restaurants that during the pandemic fell out, so to speak, with their suppliers or didn't treat them well will be paying a heavy price now.
Got 30 seconds left with you, Hashim. Just a quick one to wrap up. In terms of predictions for the rest of this year, what are we going to see? Are we going to see reduced menus? How are people going to get through this?
You know, Dubai is obviously in a boom currently, you know, and we're very lucky to be here. I don't think you're going to see reduced menus, but I do foresee you're going to see some price reductions. The summer is always slow. This is the first sort of full post-pandemic summer where people are traveling again. So it'll be very interesting to see. If you recall, last June, it was very busy because a lot of people weren't traveling. So I think it's a bit of a saturated market. You'll probably see some discounts across the board.
Looking forward to it. Hashim, really appreciate you coming in today. We'll see you on Monday. You're going to be back on Monday, aren't you?
I'm back on Monday.
Sydney's going to come in every single day. Big thanks to Hashim Montasser from The Lighthouse, talking all things food.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.